from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, when is the right time to get children to read? According to the Common Core state standards, kindergartners should acquire a range of basic reading skills, including letter and word recognition and phonics. But critics say most children are not developmentally ready to read at 5 to 6 years of age. They say kids benefit more from play-based programs. We'll take up the debate over what to expect from our young readers next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. The way reading is taught in classrooms across California and the nation is changing. That's because of Common Core state standards, or learning targets for kids from kindergarten through high school, that were adopted in 2010. Among the more controversial benchmarks is Common Core's call for kindergartners to read. Supporters say the reading standards promote a rigorous, language-rich environment, but critics say most kindergartners are not developmentally ready, and requiring them to read can even be harmful. Are we asking our kids to do too much reading too soon? Joining us is Nancy Carlson Page, Professor Emerita of Education at Lesley University, and she's co-author of a recent study called Reading in Kindergarten: Little to Gain, Much to Lose. She joins us from Somerville, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Nancy Carlson Page.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And we're also joined by Robert Pondicio. He's senior fellow at Thomas B. Fordham Institute, an education policy think tank. He's also a civics teacher and a former fifth grade public school teacher in New York City. And he joins us from Washington, D.C. Hello, Robert Pondicio.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. I also want to welcome Colleen Rao. She's a reading intervention specialist at the Berkeley Maynard Academy, a public school in North Oakland. Thanks for being here, Colleen Rao.
Thank you for having me.
Nancy Carlson Page, I want to start with you, since you co-authored this study about reading in kindergarten. And in that, you actually wrote that the Common Core standards, quote, threaten to destroy appropriate and effective approaches to early education. Those are strong words. You feel like reading for kindergartners is unrealistic. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, it's important to this distinction. We're talking about reading instruction in kindergarten, because there's a wide age range for learning to read that's been studied developmentally, and most five-year-old children are not really ready to learn to read. There are many, many experiences in the classroom that are beneficial for building an understanding or the foundation for learning to read, which will come later, but because of this Common Core standard putting pressure on teachers to teach children to read ahead of time, it's resulting in a lot of direct instruction and sort of drill-based instruction, and it's replacing the sort of necessary play-based experiential learning that we know from decades of research and theory and cognitive and developmental psychology and neuroscience is what children need.
So this is what you mean when you say that it's leading to inappropriate methods. You mean the drilling and so forth. Do you have other examples?
Well, that's a general way of explaining a difference between active, hands-on, play-based learning when you would walk into a kindergarten classroom and see blocks and paints and math manipulatives and children counting and comparing and starting to draw and put some letters in their drawings, versus classrooms that I've seen too many of recently, of children sitting in classrooms that are quite barren of materials and teachers sitting in front of them and drilling them on letters and sounds and word recognition and phonics.
So what are the standards that you are most concerned about related to kindergarten reading?
Well, there are actually many. There are actually 90 standards that are required for kindergartners to accomplish. and they're in literacy and math. So at least half of them are in literacy. So I would take issue with all of those in early literacy. But one standard is called phonics and word recognition. Associate the long and short sounds with common spellings, graphemes for the five major vowels. That's a standard for five-year-olds. You understand it? There are many others. With prompting and support, identify similarities and differences between two texts on the same topic, illustrations, descriptions, or procedures. These are standards for five-year-olds.
And Robert Pondicio, you have a different interpretation of what these Common Core standards actually mean in practice. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, I share some of Nancy's concerns. The one thing I think that's important to note at the outset, however, it's very easy to read the Common Core state standards and say, you know, as Nancy just did, well, these are inappropriate for five-year-olds. But keep in mind, the standards aren't written for five-year-olds. They're written for the teachers of the five-year-olds, you know, who are ideally and hopefully steeped in professional practice and can interpret those into age-appropriate activities in the classroom. So let's just put that, I mean, jargon or education ease, as it were, is not what you're expecting five-year-olds to know and to be able to do. But where I, you know, agree with Nancy Carlson Page is that, and it concerns me as well, and look, I'm a Common Core advocate, but if the Common Core is being used as an excuse, as it were, to turn kindergarten classrooms into a joyless grind, then something has gone very wrong. I would argue, however, that there's nothing inherent in the standards themselves that require that. But somewhere along the line, if teachers are getting the message that kindergarten is supposed to be drilling in literacy techniques and phonics, then I think that's a fairly broad misinterpretation of the standards' intent.
So, Nancy Carlson Page, do you think then that there really isn't anything wrong with the standards themselves? It's just the way they're being interpreted?
Well, no, because the standards are developmentally inappropriate. One is called Read Emergent Reader Texts with Purpose and Understanding. That's an inappropriate standard for kindergarten. But there are two issues here. One is the standards themselves are developmentally inappropriate. And number two is how are they being implemented? Because in many cases, there are high stakes tied to these standards. There are tests that are aligned with them that have some stakes, like teacher evaluation or teacher merit pay or something that, or funding for a school if it's receiving public funding, that results in teachers feeling a lot of pressure to accomplish these with children. If you just had these standards and you looked at them and a teacher could think, well, I don't think that's appropriate for children to read in kindergarten, so I'm not going to do it, that would be fine. But that's not happening. There's all kinds of stakes attached to these standards that result in teachers feeling tremendous pressure to actually accomplish them.
Colleen Rao, you are on the ground as a reading specialist. Do you see that among teachers, tremendous pressure, concern?
I do see that teachers feel pressure to have all students meet a certain benchmark, and I see the amazing kindergarten teachers at my school interpreting the standards and doing really appropriate methods with their students to teach them letters and sounds, and then when it's time to give the DRA, which is a developmental reading assessment, and all students don't make the benchmark that's been set, that teachers start to question themselves and waver, even though they believe in doing what's developmentally appropriate for their students. So I really think that we need to think about taking the pressure away and looking more at student growth as opposed to holding all students to one benchmark.
And in addition to the concerns, Nancy Carlson Page, that teachers may feel, you argue that it actually does harm to children to try to have them do things that are developmentally inappropriate. What kind of harm? Can you explain that?
Well, if you, I'm sure everyone listening and thinking about this knows young children, and if you require them to achieve something that they don't understand, it results for them in feelings of inadequacy or fear or confusion or some, you know, emotional impact from that requirement. That's not healthy for them, because the best educational situations for young children are ones where they experience a sense of meaning-making about the whole world, including the world of print and numbers and science concepts and all the things we want them to learn in the early years, but they're making sense of the experiences that they have, and they're feeling confident as learners, and they're also learning to love learning. And that has so many spillover effects for them in the moment and for life. But if we're imposing requirements that they don't understand, it has... I've been contacted by so many parents who say their children don't want to go to school, they're crying they don't want to go. Sometimes they say they're throwing up they don't want to go. We hear a lot from both teachers and parents about the impact of these requirements that aren't appropriate for kids.
We're talking about education benchmarks known as Common Core and whether they're asking our kindergartners and other students to do too much reading too soon. We're joined by Nancy Carlson Page, Professor Emerita of Education at Lesley University and co-author of a study called Reading in Kindergarten, Little to Gain, Much to Lose, and Robert Pondicio, Senior Fellow at Thomas B. Fordham Institute, an education policy think tank. We're also talking with Colleen Rao, a reading intervention specialist at the Berkeley Maynard Academy, a public school in North Oakland. Robert Pondicio, so you're hearing Nancy Carlson Page say these kids are really feeling inadequate or confused, even having, you know, physical side effects from being taught developmentally inappropriate curriculum. What is your view of developmentally appropriate?
Oh Lord, it's how much time do you have? It's one of the issues that I struggle with in reading this report. Which, and let me just say, I find a lot of merit to what Nancy Carlson Page has written here. And I think you can't. I still think of myself as a teacher first and foremost, an elementary school teacher first and foremost. So I share some of her concerns about the deleterious effects of too much testing and too much pressure on kids. And I'm pleased that we're differentiating between what the standards say and how they're being implemented, because in that becomes more of a question of professional practice and interpretation than the standards themselves. That said, I do struggle a little bit with this idea of developmental appropriateness. I mean, it's a bit of a catch-all, and it goes back to we probably learned this in high school and as undergraduates, the Piaget theory of developmental stages, and I'm not sure that's as clear-cut as we like to think. So it's a bit of a shutdown phrase to call something developmentally inappropriate. But it's redolent of this idea that there are discrete stages in childhood development. And while there's some truth to that, it's not as clear-cut as that. It's not a stair step. It's really more of a progression. Dan Willingham is a cognitive scientist at the University of Virginia whose work I'm very impressed with. And he wrote recently a column about this where he points out that children's cognition is a variable day-to-day as opposed to occurring in discrete stages. So, the same child, for example, can do a task today and not do it tomorrow, or vice versa. So it the idea of developmental appropriateness, while it is broadly interesting and applicable, it may not be the best guide to instruction for teachers.
Colleen Rao, what's your reaction to that? Is children's developmental appropriateness, or what they're encountering as developmentally appropriate, so variable that it's hard to just, make it an across-the-board sort of level?
The thing that I think is most important is to know your students if you're a teacher. And So for some students, something might be developmentally appropriate, whereas for other students in that same classroom, it might not be. For example, if you have a group of kindergarten students and you have 25% of them that come in not knowing how to write their name or the names in their letter, not knowing how to write their names or identify the letters in their name, then it's not going to be appropriate to push them towards reading necessarily by the end of kindergarten, but it is going to be appropriate to push them to develop reading readiness skills, like develop their vocabulary, develop their letter and sound recognition and phonological awareness, which is the ability to understand that words are made up of sound parts. If we push students to do something without helping them build the basic blocks that they need to get to the end goal, then they're going to develop inefficient coping strategies for later on in their reading.
And are you actually seeing this, Colleen Rao? I mean, it's been 4 years since Common Core was adopted, but of course, we're still really working to get it off the ground. But are you seeing changes, and are you seeing the responses that Nancy Carlson Page is describing among the students, that it's just too much too soon, too academic, and there are some side effects to that?
So this is my 11th year teaching, and 8 years ago I taught kindergarten. And 8 years ago when I taught kindergarten, there was the same expectation around students learning all their letters and sounds, sight words, and beginning to read early emergent texts. So that expectation, in my experience, has been around for longer than Common Core. And I have seen the pressure that's being spoken of and how that impacts students who are being exposed to things that they're not ready for in a way that's not appropriate for them.
Are you seeing that worsening under Common Core? Forgive me.
I don't see that it's worsening under Common Core, actually. I see, actually, an really good shift at my school in particular, where teachers are doing more thematic units, doing more active hands-on things with their students, because before, in the state of California, students started taking standardized tests in the second grade. Now they're not taking the SBAC until third grade, which, you know, made people stop and look at how we're going to prepare them for this assessment that's actually requiring a lot more critical thinking than the previous test in the state of California. So I really think it's important that we think about how we're preparing teachers to implement the standards and seeing them as a guide and not as a way to punish teachers or students who are not at the standard, but at the same time still holding high expectations for all students that are appropriate for each student.
So, Nancy Carlson Page, do you see the possibility of maintaining these standards, but just helping teachers to better implement them?
Well, as I said earlier, there's a problem with the standards themselves.
Right.
And then if the implementation, this is tied also to teacher professionalism and how much we dedicate as a nation resources to high level of teacher professionalism. And, for example, in a country like Finland, every teacher has a master's degree. I think that would be a really great place to start. But we have many, many teachers, especially at the early childhood level, who are not very well prepared and don't have a strong knowledge base in early childhood theory and practice. And in fact, in a lot of my visiting of classrooms around the country, what I find is in poorer communities that are really underfunded and under-resourced, the least experienced teachers tend to be there. And actually, the more experienced a teacher is, the more skilled he or she is at implementing these standards. It sounds like at Colleen's school this happens in ways that are still maintaining some very good aspects of early childhood education. But I've seen classrooms where children are, you know, sitting bereft of any materials and just copying from the board in kindergarten and, you know, not having any enrichment experiences. So there's a wide range. Our report actually addressed the general trend. If you go school by school, and Colleen sounds like she's in a, you know, a pretty good school, which is great, but if you look at what's happening nationally, there was a report called Crisis in the Classroom a few years ago from Alliance for Childhood. You see that research shows that on a national scale, there's less play and experiential-based curriculum happening overall and much more didactic instruction, even though we have research that shows long-term there are greater gains from play-based programs than from more academically focused ones. And that's my problem with the Common Core. It's not evidence-based. It's not based in research. And no one has shown the research that supports any of these Common Core requirements, and that's the biggest problem we're having with them.
Robert Panduccio, do you see what Nancy Carlson Page sees, which is that although there may be exceptions at schools, that the general trend is that it's not being taught appropriately?
Well, yeah, and the one area that Nancy and I are going to broadly agree on is on teacher training. And I can use my own experience here and frankly call myself out a little bit. I as I sit here, I am a certified New York State teacher. I'm legally allowed to teach K through 6. I have a master's degree in elementary education. There was not one thing about any of this in terms of early childhood literacy, direct instruction on how to teach emerging readers to read that I ever got, whether it was in my degree program or professional development. Now, in fairness, I was a fifth grade teacher, not a kindergarten teacher, so I wouldn't have expected my professional development to cover this. But it's a little bit of a scandal, frankly, how ill-prepared some of our teachers are to teach emerging readers to read. And I completely agree with Nancy that this is at its worst in our high needs communities. I mean, you know, keep in mind when I was a teacher, initially I was teaching in the South Bronx. These days I teach in Harlem, but a low income community. Both of them are mostly populated by low income children of color. And it, if I can just bridge this a little bit, I mean, the thing that concerns me, and one of the reasons I'm a Common Core advocate, it's very, you know, it's all well and good to say, well, some of these things are too much too soon. But you know, keep in mind the trajectory that children like the ones that I teach can be put on. I don't have the data at arm's length here, but I believe something on the order of 90% of children who are struggling readers in first grade, the year after we're discussing, are also struggling readers in third grade. And if you are a struggling reader in third grade, you are 3 out of 4 chance that you're going to be a struggling reader in ninth grade, et cetera, et cetera. So this glide path of putting kids, especially low-income kids of color, on a glide path for academic failure starts really, really early. So while I'm deeply sympathetic to some of the concerns that we're discussing here, I just don't want us to lose the sense of urgency around this. I hope nobody takes from this report the message that it we should just wait and be patient and let kids read when they get around to it. There does have to be some way to maintain a sense of urgency, especially for low-income kids.
So are you saying that the Common Core standards, that they're actually a gap-closing tool for low-income students?
Well, I think it's critical to not overpromise. I mean, I'm encouraged by the sense of urgency, and I'm encouraged by the early literacy aspects of Common Core, because as a teacher in the South Bronx, you know, I saw what happened when kids did not get this good, strong early push in reading. And on the standards themselves, you know, it's one thing to talk about this one particular standard about reading by the end of kindergarten, but I would also encourage the listeners to go through the standards one by one and say, well, is this something that you want your kindergarten child to be able to do? Frankly, a lot of these skills that are listed, children walk in the door with. For example, and I don't have it in front of me, but one of the standards is basically that children in kindergarten should know upper and lowercase letters. Well, 61% of children today already walk in the door with that. Another one is that they should know that English print is read from left to right, and about 2 out of 3 kids walk in the door in kindergarten already knowing these things. On the one hand, we don't want to lose sight of the forest for the trees, but there are particular skills that are completely appropriate for kids to learn in kindergarten that are part of Common Core. And indeed, many children, even most children, already have when they come to kindergarten.
And we'll continue our conversation with Robert Pondicio, Senior Fellow at Thomas B. Fordham Institute, and Nancy Carlson Page, Professor Emerita of Education at Lesley University, and Colleen Rao, a Reading Intervention Specialist. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about whether new national education benchmarks known as Common Core are asking our kids to do too much reading too soon. We're talking with Nancy Carlson Page, co-author of a recent study called Reading in Kindergarten, Little to Gain, Much to Lose, and Robert Pondicio, senior fellow at Thomas B. Fordham Institute, an education policy think tank, and with Colleen Rao, a reading intervention specialist at the Berkeley Maynard Academy in North Oakland. And I want to open our phone lines to our listeners and ask you what you think. Are we asking our young kids to do too much? Are you a parent? Were your kids ready to read in kindergarten? Or if you were the parent of a kindergartner, does he or she seem ready to read now? What is your reaction to the standards? As a teacher, are you seeing either positive or negative effects of the adoption of these new standards? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to KQED to forum at kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can also post your questions on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. And Colleen Rao, I understand you have to leave in a few minutes, and I just wanted to ask you, do you find that if we don't slow down enough for our kids, that they are catching up in later grades or not?
So I want to answer that question, but I also just want to let the other guests as well as listeners know that my school is in Oakland. It is 78% free and reduced lunch. 98% of our students are African American or Latino. So I just want to emphasize that I do believe that we need to have high standards for all students and that we do need to have a sense of urgency around teaching students to read. But if that sense of urgency plays out in a way that we are pushing students to do something that they don't have the foundation to do, then what I find is that those students become inefficient readers and they really struggle to fluently read because they have so many holes. And my job is to look at my whole school, look at the data of how students are doing, and we use multiple forms of assessments in order to do that. And when I work with students and I start to get to know them as readers, I see how we might have pushed them to read whole words before they were ready because they didn't have the solid foundational skills such as phonological awareness, meaning they need to understand how to rhyme. They need to know how to break words into syllables. And they need to know their letters and sounds so that they can begin to see how letter strings make sense and that those letter strings have meaning. I don't ever think it makes sense to accelerate if you're not taking the time to make sure students have the foundation. And I think what I have seen, especially I had the perspective of teaching a kindergarten to first grade loop. And when I taught that loop, I saw how the light bulb goes on for students at different times. But if we make students feel pressure so that they shut down, then that light bulb is not going to be as likely to come on. And they're not going to develop the confidence that they need to become successful readers later. I also think it's really interesting that this conversation is focusing so much on Common Core. When I started teaching, I taught in the LA Unified School District in a school that was in the bottom 10% in terms of student performance. And there was such a push to teach. We were judged based on our oral reading fluency scores. And so teachers felt this pressure to just have kids read the sight words and skip all the other words so that the number that went to the district that they were judged on made it look like their students could read something even though they weren't actually making meaning and reading. So again, I just think it's really important. You know, I really agree with what people have said about this is about preparing our teachers and making sure that they have a theoretical understanding of early childhood and also the process of learning to read. You know, I've had new teachers at my school say to me, I should have learned this in my credential program. And I think, yes, and I can't believe that you didn't.
Colleen Rao.
Sorry.
Thank you. A reading intervention specialist at the Berkeley Maynard Academy in North Oakland. Thanks so much for being here. I'm sorry I cut you off. Was there one last thing you wanted to say?
Oh, no. No, I think I've said it all.
Okay.
I'm going to go work with some students on reading.
Great. Well, thanks again. Leanne writes, I've been a teacher in the SFUSD for 24 years. When I began teaching in 1990, we did not learn to read in kindergarten. I left kinder after a few years and went on to first grade, and now I'm back in a kinder classroom. The differences I see are marked. Now that expectation is that kinder students leave at the end of the year reading a level D book. Many of my students started the year not knowing what letters are. Many of them do not come from homes that value reading, that have books. I am supposed to push, and I mean push, these kids to achieve the standards. Most will not. What this unrealistic expectation does is make children feel bad about school, stresses me out, and creates a decidedly unjoyful atmosphere in kindergarten. And Boris writes, my mother taught me to read on my own before I was 4 years old in Russian. I have been a voracious reader since then, speak multiple languages, and understand many more. I'm always surprised by two things. Many Americans don't read and generally have a poor grasp of English language and vocabulary. Stop this boorish race to the bottom. Shirley writes, I went to school in England and all the kids learned to read in kindergarten. When I began public school in America in first grade, we didn't learn the math that I already learned in kindergarten in England until the third grade. My experience with public education in this country has led me to believe that the system is designed to deliberately dumb down children. Nancy Carlson Page, do you want to respond to those last two comments?
Well, you know, this is the thing. There is a very wide range of age for learning many, many skills and concepts in the early years. And if someone has a personal, some children learn to read at four. I have, in my family, a lot of high achievers, but they don't learn to read until they're seven. And I've tried to teach a granddaughter to read when she was five and six, and no go. It didn't happen until she was over seven. Because these are developmental things that you can't really force. But if someone has a personal experience where they learned at a certain age, they might generalize it and think that all people can. But it's just not true. I mean, there have been many studies from the Gazelle Institute on, you know, ages when children learn various skills, and there's just simply, you know, a wide range. The other thing is that we're not talking about, I want to be careful that we're not dichotomizing either we teach kids or we don't teach kids. This is the thing. Early childhood education is my professional field. I have a passion about it. I've spent my career teaching early childhood teachers at the master's level how to teach young children, how they learn the theory and the research behind this profession. And many people are teaching young children who don't have a degree in early childhood education. They really don't have the knowledge base for being able to do it. There are developmental progressions for learning literacy, for math, science, all these concepts. The progressions mean that children construct these concepts over time in different ways and on different timetables, but they are progressions that we can understand. We know what it looks like as children come to understand the print system, how to read, how to write, how to build math concepts. These are things we learn in our professional field and things that we know and we bring with us as a lens when we're looking at young children. And it informs us as to how we work with them. Each individual child is different and actually needs a different kind of teaching instruction. So when you have these standards that are kind of one-size-fits-all expectations for children at every grade level, it has a harmful influence on really high-quality early childhood education.
Nancy Carlson Page, you have proposed withdrawing and rewriting the Kindergarten Common Core standards. What else would you like to see happen now?
Well, if you look, the Common Core standards were developed by two groups, the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers. There, we read the biographies of every person in these two groups, and there wasn't a single early childhood teacher or professional present. Yet they wrote standards for kindergarten, first and second grade. Well, they shouldn't be doing that. They should be using early. What we want to see is removing all of the early childhood standards from the Common Core and putting together a consortium of highly respected early childhood thinkers and thought leaders in the field to start to develop standards, or maybe we would call them guidelines, that are appropriate for early childhood education.
Robert Pondicio, what do you think of that?
Ooh, a lot to chew on there.
I mean, do you think they should be withdrawn and convening a task force?
No, I don't, because, again, you know, and I'm not going to claim to have Nancy's level of or depth of expertise, but, you know, as a classroom teacher myself, I look at the standards and I go through them one by one and say, well, does this strike me as beyond the capabilities of a fifth grader or a five-year-old in my school? And I answer no, and I don't want to bore your listeners by going one by one through the standards. But in other words, it's less interesting to me who wrote the standards than whether I think these are achievable with the students in front of me or the students in my school. So I think that's the more germane question.
And you believe quite strongly that they are
achievable. Yeah, I think so. And I think most literacy experts that I've spoken to seem to agree.
Well, let's hear what our listeners have to say. Let's go to Elise in Oakland. Hi, Elise.
Hi. Thanks for doing this program. I have a kindergartner in an Oakland public school. I want to bring up the fact that Robert said earlier that, you know, up to 40% of students are not coming into kindergarten already knowing their letters and how to write their name. He also said that the Common Core is possibly not being taught correctly in all schools or not being taught appropriately. And my child's kindergarten class, the teacher recommends up to 25% of her students be retained and repeat kindergarten because they are not grasping the material. So I would like to know how Common Core addresses intervention for the children who are not grasping the material in the Common Core.
Robert Pondicio, do you want to take that?
It's silent on that. I mean, it's important to understand what standards are and standards are not. I find whenever I'm asked about this, the first thing I usually point out is that standards are not a curriculum. They are not a pedagogy. Standards are essentially benchmarks. They say at this age, a child should know and be able to do these things. How children are made to get or to meet those benchmarks, that's a purely school by school, district by district, or state by state decision. So I'm just not in a position to comment on what's going on in an individual school because that's every school is going to interpret these standards differently. Some, sounds like Colleen's school, for example, is doing a terrific job at them, and we've all, I'm sure Nancy has and I have, been in schools where you see things you'd rather not see.
Elise, thanks for the call. Let's go to Doug in Alameda. Hi, Doug.
Good morning. I also have a kindergartner in public schools in Alameda, like the last caller. And my son is actually prospering. I've been lucky enough to spend some time in the classroom with the teachers and the kids, and I have two observations from that. One is it seems to me that the need to support teachers is probably the most important thing on this. And the second is I have really noticed a difference between kids who went to preschool and kids who didn't. So I was hoping that some of your guests today could talk about the importance of preschool, even though they don't teach Common Core at preschool, and the need for universal early childhood education. Thank you, Doug.
Nancy Carlson Page.
Oh, I'm a big supporter of universal pre-K, but it worries me, though, because we see this push down of academic skills to kindergarten and also race to the top funding wanting to align pre-K with Common Core. So what we don't want to see is more of the problems that we're already seeing pushed down to even younger children. There's a really important distinction. The reason it matters to me that there weren't early childhood educators developing the Common Core is that young children learn differently than older children, adolescents, and adults. They're amazing humans who are on their way to becoming complex abstract thinkers, but through a very long developmental process. Younger children really do learn differently, and it's important to understand the ways that they learn so that we can support them optimally so that they will succeed in school and feel a sense of success and actually build the concepts in early literacy and every other area that they need. And so if we have universal pre-K, I think it would be wonderful, but we have to design it in such a way that it's really using the best of what we know in the field of early childhood education to help all children prosper and learn.
And Robert Pondicio, I am curious what you think about preschool, and also we have here transitional kindergarten and how it fits
right
into all this.
Yeah, I have a complicated relationship with UPK, Universal Pre-K. I live in New York City, where our Mayor de Blasio has made this his signature initiative. And suffice it to say that I think children who live, say, on the Upper East Side of Manhattan don't really need Universal Pre-K. So it's the universal part that I struggle with. In other words, I would argue that a good Pre-K should probably simulate the language environment of a middle-class or affluent home, to paint with, frankly, too broad of a brush. In other words, I'm fond of saying that affluent kids tend to grow up in something of a rich language stew. You know, they have educated parents that speak in full sentences, that ask them questions, engage them in conversation. They visit museums, they travel, they are cognitively constantly on the receiving end of rich language. So the pre-K idea would be really to try to address that and simulate some of those rich inputs for children, frankly, like the ones that I work with in Harlem or the South Bronx. So pre-K, I think, is fine, and then there's a whole distinction between is it just pre-K or what do you mean by quality pre-K? For me, language is paramount. But it's the universal piece of it that I think it's not necessarily the best use of resources to make it universal.
And let's go to more of our listeners' calls. Maria in San Rafael. Hi, Maria.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to mention I have a first grader who's been struggling with reading, and we're actually at a private school in San Rafael. And, you know, my daughter has come home from school many times this year, just, you know, being very upset and talking about how other first graders are reading Harry Potter. And to me, it's just very shocking. This is my youngest daughter. I have an older daughter who is 10, and in first grade, I just feel that I wouldn't want my child to be reading Harry Potter in first grade. And you know, of course, she's comparing herself to others, and we're not finding the support from her teacher for her to actually be learning at a level that's appropriate for her individually. I feel that she's being expected to learn. The class is being expected to learn at just one level and be fluent readers by now.
Maria, thanks. Robert Pondiso, I thought I heard you. Did you say something there?
No, I was responding, and forgive me, I couldn't make out every word of your caller, what she was saying, but I heard that she was referring to, you know, reading Harry Potter in first grade, and that's one of those things that it's easy to lampoon this idea, and it's important to remember what do we mean when we're talking about reading at the end of kindergarten. And by the way, that is what the standard says: children should be able to read, you know, emerging readers, or what I would call decodable readers, meaning, you know, hop on pops, simple books, by the end of kindergarten. We're not talking about, you know, children reading of Mice and Men, you know, at age 5 or 6. So, you know, it's important to just define what we mean by reading, fluently at the end of kindergarten. It's not Harry Potter.
The other point, though, I think that Maria brings up is just how should parents respond? I mean, do they need to adjust their expectations in terms of what their kids will be doing?
Again, you know, all children are different, and all children, you know, it's very hard to say. So it's and it sounds like they're based on what your caller was saying, there may have been some specific learning issues that were not discussed. But broadly speaking, you know, there are any number of habits that, frankly, middle class and affluent parents tend to do almost axiomatically or reflexively: reading to their children, speaking in full sentences, etc., engaging them in conversation, that support language development. But in terms of the specific issues that child is having in first grade, obviously I'm not in a position to comment.
And let's go to more of your calls. Jason in San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I wanted to comment on relating. I think your guest, Ms. Carlson Page, has some valid points. I support Common Core in general, but I'm worried that a one-size-fits-all approach to kids is wrong. And I've heard some theories recently about mathematics, and that a lot of people who don't like math were really, the problem is that they were pushed to do the wrong level of math too early for them, you know, not saying that the grade level, but just that since everyone's different, and then these people get pushed to do it too early, and then they hate math for the rest of their lives. And if that's the same thing we're about to embark on for reading, then that seems like the wrong approach. And your other guest just said that that all kids are different, and I don't understand why the Common Core can't really address that. I guess I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason. Nancy Carlson Page or Robert Pondiso, do you want to take Jason's comment?
Well, this is Nancy, obviously. We're working on a paper right now to show that to actually deconstruct the math standards and show that they're not based in research either. And we'll be coming out with that in the next couple of months.
you know, I'm repeating my concern about the Common Core standards for early childhood, and that's what I'm addressing, really, because that's what I really feel that I understand well, are not evidence-based. They're not based in research. There isn't even a way to a mechanism for correcting them or rethinking them or revising them over time.
Nancy Carlson Page, could I ask you, though, a question? Do you support, then, more leveled reading where you try to sort of determine a level for each kid and have them stay within that?
Sure. Once you get to the point where children are reading, then leveled books are helpful, and teachers, you know, they're kind of geared for a level that teachers determine children to be at, sure. But we're talking more in pre-K and kindergarten of pre-reading skills. Mm-hmm. And those are very, very complex, but we put a section in our paper about what does a good literacy learning classroom look like in kindergarten, because we didn't want people thinking this is a question of either you do or don't teach it. It's a matter of how do you teach it. And
I agree with that.
We tried to describe, you know, a really thriving classroom that's rich in oral language, that provides lots of opportunities for developing an understanding of symbols at increasingly abstract levels of understanding, because there's a lot of symbol development that precedes being able to recognize letters.
And you're listening to Forum. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. Nancy Carlson Page, sorry to interrupt you there. You know, one of the things I'm also wondering and that I've seen asked is this question of whether there is an appropriate level of struggle for kids. It has felt like in education, we're very concerned about kids getting frustrated and then getting turned off. But is there some kind of middle ground in terms of struggle?
Well, to me, being a lifelong student of cognitive developmental theory, I would say absolutely that anytime we encounter new information, and that's for all of us, I think, children, adults, anybody, there's a little bit of disequilibrium. We struggle to try to make sense of it. And good education actually makes use of that disequilibrium, that sort of urge to make sense of something new that you don't really understand and you kind of try to. But if, as Colleen was saying earlier, if you present children with information that's too disparate from what they already know, then they give up, or then they feel confused, or they cry, or they get turned off. But so part of the art of teaching, and it's truly an art, is to understand where every child is in developing concepts in literacy, math, and social-emotional areas and science, and then being able to present information in ways that are new and interesting but will cause a little bit of struggle on the part of the child to try to understand them.
Barbara Pondicio, what are your thoughts on the value of play-based learning that Nancy Carlson Page brings
up? Yeah, I'll answer that in a second, but I just wanted to quickly add that everything that Nancy just said, I completely agree with. Well, what I'm missing, frankly, is how there's anything in Common Core that is at odds with the kindergarten environment that she very eloquently describes, because if there's a conflict, I'm not seeing it. I guess what I struggle with in having read the report is this idea that there's these two different things. There's literacy and there's play, and that somehow they're in competition with each other. Mm. I'm simply not sure why Nancy and her co-authors feel compelled to present this as if it's a choice. I mean, I would hope that and I think based on what I know of Nancy's work, I think this is already happening, but I think the authors obviously could do the field a very good service by helping those of us who are in the classroom create a cognitively rich and rewarding kindergarten class that's fun, that's inviting, that's engaging, and sets children, and again, especially the children I'm most concerned with, disadvantaged children, on the road to becoming readers. I'm just a little bit concerned that if teachers are getting the message that kindergarten is supposed to be, you know, seat work and drills and worksheets and tests, I'm not sure where that message is coming from, because I simply don't see that in the Common Core standards.
And let's go to Jeff in Iowa. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Homeschooled. I'm the father of five kids homeschooled, three in college, two in the high school age. And I appreciate everybody talking about and focusing on the kids, but I will rest assured and guarantee you that each of my children learned to read at very, very different times. But what we have is two parents who were read to our kids voraciously. And I think one of the things we're missing in the discussion is, particularly for disadvantaged kids, are we reaching out to the parents to make sure that the parents have a level of literacy and read to their kids and understand the importance of it? So I'll take my comments offline. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Nancy
Carlson-Page?
That is so important. Reading to children, actually, the key to learning to read for young kids is being read to. That's one central key of many. But in classrooms, I'm very involved in an early literacy program in Cambridge, Massachusetts here. One of the things we do is use big books so that all the children who come in, and they come in from very diverse backgrounds and more than English, just one language, we use big books because the children sit in a circle, the teacher reads the big book and uses a pointer to show the words that she's or he's reading, and the children start having the experience of being read to in a communal way, but they're getting some of the benefits of what children, more affluent children, get at home with being with the lap method, we call it lovingly, but sitting on laps and reading books. We try to provide that for all children because it's one of the essential keys. We have a program here in Cambridge where children in kindergarten take and first grade, they take books home and bring them back. We have books in Spanish and in English, and their parents are encouraged to read with them, and then they come back and get more books. So, yes, that's a really important thing to be doing.
Nancy Carlson-Page is Professor Emeritus of Education at Lesley University and co-authored a recent study called Reading in Kindergarten, Little to Gain, Much to Lose. That report can actually be found on our website. Also, Robert Pondicio, Senior Fellow at Thomas B. Fordham Institute, an education policy think tank. Thank you for joining us. And I also want to thank Colleen Rao, who joined us earlier, a reading intervention specialist at the Berkeley Maynard Academy. And I want to thank our listeners for their great questions and comments. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. You can continue this conversation online. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.